My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/MPN to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/MPN. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business too? Caroline Kay hosts a great podcast called Snippets of Genius. Caroline, tell us what these folks will get out of listening.
Snippets of Genius is a lighthearted business podcast with some brilliant insights into how you can attract and cultivate success. In each episode, I have an inspiring conversation with genius guests from the worlds of business development, marketing, design, and wellness. Each of them share their ballsy, daring moves to burst business opportunities wide open. Every episode is designed to give you as much value as possible so you can decide, define, and develop anything you want in your career or business.
Hard to turn that down. Where can people subscribe?
They can come on over to my website, which is www.carolinek.co/podcast, or find the show at marketingpodcast.net, or search for Snippets of Genius wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
I'm Nick Westergaard, and this is On Brand, helping you tell your story. My guest this week is Jesse Pierwall.
You have to go beyond the marketer's view and the funnel view is, you know, into this window that I'm talking about by, you know, taking the customer first approach. You know, very often you have to have a chief digital officer and their team at the table to understand what signals you're getting beyond kind of the marketing communications.
Jesse is a builder, storyteller, and strategist who works with leaders to define their organization's brand purpose, activate brands through modern marketing, and drive brand-driven growth and impact through rigorous insight, unfiltered creativity, and experiential innovation. Over 12 years at global marketing firm Profit, Jesse helped grow the organization from 70 to 450 employees and tripled the company's revenue. It was also at Profit that Jesse and his teams launched transformative brands like T-Mobile's Uncarrier, Intel's Amazing, the Cosmopolitan of Las Vegas, and Amazon's Amazon Business. Today, Jesse is the global head of brand at Qualtrics, where he is defining the category of experience management and building a brand around breakthroughs at one of the most valuable SaaS companies in the world. He is also the host of the podcast Breakthrough Builders, a Qualtrics-sponsored show that invites people whose passions, perspectives, and instincts have impacted the world to share their stories. With curiosity at the forefront of every conversation, Jesse's mission is to pave the way for inspiration that unfolds into execution. Jesse, welcome to On Brand.
Nick, thank you for having me. With an intro like that, I hope to do my level best to be able to follow.
Well, it should theoretically be easy, if not somewhat disorienting, doing a podcast with a fellow podcaster. And on that front, you know, you talk about experience, the category of experience management. Talk a little bit about, you know, the bio says defining that category. I think that's a great place to start. Could you define that category for us a little bit?
Yeah, experience management is really the discipline of running your business from the outside in. You know, historically, I think people would look at a business and say, well, you've got finance and you've got operations and you've got sales and you've got all these elements of the P&L that drive revenue and that support revenue. I am one of those people who has a favorite window to look through a company at, and that's the customer window. And maybe you share that in common with me, Nick. I've always just been enthralled with what does it mean to run a business from the outside in and be truly customer driven and empathy driven. And when you're thinking about experience, and it can extend beyond customer and into employee experience, but when you're being experience driven and you're truly understanding where the gaps are in what you're serving up to customers in your product, your customer experience, your brand experience, your employee experience, you're really solving problems that matter. And when you solve those problems that matter, whether that's the experience that somebody has on a flight, their onboarding experience at a new company, feature creep issues in software, something that doesn't resonate with the messaging, when you get those things from wrong to right, or when you originate correctly the first time in a way that resonates and drives action, you just get to a really powerful place of trust and durability and emotional connection with consumers, with employees. So experience management is really all about how do you run a business using customer insight and customer empathy and employee insight and empathy to get to the right decision, the right action to move the world forward.
So I track with all of that. And the hard thing about, you said two hard E words to be clear. You said empathy and experience, but we'll come back to empathy. But when it comes to experience, all of those touch points that you talked about, the impact of flipping them from, not being on track, on brand, versus getting them right that you can have. The challenge with experience, to me, is the vastness of it. So in that day-to-day management, what does the day-to-day management of experience look like? How can we get our arms around that?
I think you have to take a deconstructionist approach to it, Nick. I think you really have to put yourself in the shoes of the customer and go back to something that's been actually relatively well healed for a decade or more now around what the customer journey looks like. What are the individual touch points that somebody has with your product, with your brand, with your communications, with your sales reps, with your AI and bots, et cetera, and understand where people are satisfied and where people are dissatisfied. It's analogous to understanding where people are either graduating through your funnel or perhaps dropping off in your funnel. But whether I lay it out left to right or bottom to top or in some amazing three-dimensional way or on a good old whiteboard, if you happen to have the luxury of collaborating with your colleagues in person somewhere, understanding node by node, touchpoint by touchpoint, as they go from the website to the physical experience, to giving feedback on the experience, to recommending it to others, to looking again for a repeat visit. What are the 20, the 30, the 40, the 100 touchpoints that a consumer or a customer will have with your brand throughout the year, whether that be with a person or whether that be through technology or through messaging and communications? And anatomically deconstruct it, right? My father is an orthopedic surgeon and talked about you have a skeleton, but you have each individual bone in your body. And at any given moment, if even one of those 200 plus bones isn't working right, your body's not working right. And I think it's the same way with experience, where you might have 50 or 60 or 100 different touch points with a brand in a month, in a quarter, in a year. If even one or two of those are off, the experience is broken. And so there's just a tremendous amount of value to be gained for businesses in richness and in relationships to be built between brands and people by getting that whole experience right.
I love the orthopedics angle. I feel like we go as brand builders to metaphors a lot, and even with the word building, we end up with blueprints and construction. But I love the idea of orthopedics and the bones and the structure of all of this, because I find myself that has some connectivity to, I feel like when organizations that I'm working with and we're talking about, I always think of like how these problems present, and it feels kind of medically diagnostic in its approach, because sometimes it presents as ache and pain A, and it's really related to root problem B. I get very quickly out of my element in how to use these different words, but it does seem like when you talk about deconstructing it, because something different could be behind what's showing up as a challenge from either the customer's perspective or the brand's perspective.
Marketers have gotten really well heeled at understanding how to use empirically defined data that's collected from consumers, that's collected from people, you know, closer to the top of the funnel around what purchase drivers matter, what their awareness and familiarity levels are, and at the bottom of the funnel around, you know, behavioral, you know, actions, digital marketing. But where sometimes you have to go beyond the marketer's view and the funnel view is, you know, into this window that I'm talking about by, you know, taking the customer first approach. You know, very often you have to have a chief digital officer and their team at the table to understand what signals you're getting beyond kind of the marketing communications. Very often you have to have, you know, you might have a partners team and a channels team if you're in the business of kind of selling through a Costco or selling through, you know, an Amazon to understand what sentiment are being thrown off with the experiences at retail. You will almost definitely have to bring in your people team, your HR team, to understand where employee experience gaps are and opportunities are, particularly in this time when so many people are indicating the possibility of kind of shifting jobs and shifting roles. To me, the fundamental thesis behind experience, back to the two E's you mentioned, is empathy. And what I love about what we're doing at Qualtrics is we're essentially engineering empathy at scale. Thinking about every single voice matters, every single person matters, every single experience matters, getting down to that N of one, but then being able to do that at scale so that if you're Patagonia or Kroger or Costco or Levi's or even a small brand like Shinola, that you think about all of this stuff from the outside in.
On Brand, we'll be right back after this.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/MPN to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/MPN. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business too? Caroline Kay hosts a great podcast called Snippets of Genius. Caroline, tell us what these folks will get out of listening.
Snippets of Genius is a lighthearted business podcast with some brilliant insights into how you can attract and cultivate success. In each episode, I have an inspiring conversation with genius guests from the worlds of business development, marketing, design, and wellness. Each of them share their ballsy, daring moves to burst business opportunities wide open. Every episode is designed to give you as much value as possible so you can decide, define, and develop anything you want in your career or business.
Hard to turn that down. Where can people subscribe?
They can come on over to my website, which is www.carolinek.co/podcast, or find the show at marketingpodcast.net, or search for Snippets of Genius wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
Now, back to the show.
Well, I'm glad that you mentioned Qualtrics there, because that's obviously where you sit. And it does seem, it's really interesting, your approach to branding and what you're talking about and deconstructing the customer journey and understanding where they're at and how they feel. I kept, as you were describing all of that before you you just brought Qualtrics up, it was kind of emerging in my mind that this is a real interesting intersection between both your approach to branding and a tool uniquely suited to help brands do, well, exactly what you're talking about. So do you ever find that paradoxical at all? Or I mean, it seems extremely helpful, but and also that you could potentially be one of your best use cases.
Yeah, I am someone who embraces paradox, which we can get into, but I find it wonderfully accretive. You know, I spent, as you mentioned in the upfront, I spent a long time at a consultancy called Profit. And one of the beautiful things about being at a firm like Profit is that you get to focus on growing a firm and growing a culture within the company, but you get so much interesting, rich, important, instructive access into the organizations and the leadership teams that are kind of taking brands to the world across not just the subcategories of tech, but through some of the other kinds of categories I got to work in, as you had mentioned, around hospitality and FS and others. And one of the things that, you know, you're always looking for in a professional services context is not just which brands you're proud of having built or been part of building, but which brands you could actually see yourself becoming part of. And for, you know, many years, there wasn't one that, even though I had had a great amount of pride in a lot of the work that our teams had done, I could really see myself kind of wearing the stripes of. And when I got a chance to work with the team at Qualtrics for the first time in 2018 while I was at Profit, I instantly discovered a connection between my own personal purpose and my own passion around brand building and what the ethos of the company was. And to be able to work with our CMO, Kylan, at that time, and one of the co-founders, Ryan Smith, at that time, and a few others at the team of Qualtrics, to help define, you know, in words and in pictures and through ideas, like what the brand would be about, was a really transformative kind of moment for me. And when I layered upon that, okay, well, what this company is about is discovering sentiment and opinion and feeling and feedback and deploying empathy at scale for organizations that want to win by looking at the outside and coming in. It's like, okay, so the product, the culture, the brand, the growth arc, the sector, all of these things came together in this really rich alchemy, such that when I had an opportunity to join the company, even though it wasn't in any way an easy choice, because I have such a great amount of love for Profit and the culture that Michael Dunn and the rest of the leadership team have built there, it really just felt like an amazing opportunity for me to take.
Well, that's such a neat story. And you brought us back to the other E word of empathy and employing empathy at scale. And as we sit here at the beginning of another new year that is once again decidedly different, it's got more uncertainty. How does where we're at right now, which is continues to be indescribable and abnormal, how does the approach that you're talking about align with where brands are looking at or trying to plan where they should be at in another uncertain year ahead?
Well, it's a great question. And the way I would answer it is, you know, now more than ever in these times, I think we are all continuing to experience the reinforcement of the idea that being purpose-driven and purpose-centric is what matters most. It's not about the next offer. It's not about the next discount. It's not about the next feature release, the next product line extension. Right now, more than ever, people need to understand where they share an interest with brands, with products, with things that they can devote their time and their attention to, whether it's their dollars as consumers or whether it's their time and their energy and their opportunity costs as employees. And so brands right now that are clearly articulating their sense of purpose, their mission, the reason that they exist, and then backing that claim up with specific actions that they're taking and generating awareness of those actions and having those actions matter, those are the ones that are going to break apart from the pack as we continue to redefine whatever is the next normal in our global society. Those brands that try to kind of look one or two quarters ahead and sort of assume that like normal is nearly back and that consumers that maybe loved them a few years ago will kind of beat a path back to their door, I think will actually be chagrined or sad to discover that actually in these last couple of years, if you have been one to clearly articulate purpose, drive action around that purpose, and continue to kind of be relentlessly relevant in people's lives, like those are the brands that are going to kind of win and create emotional and durable connections as we move ahead.
When you talked about new normal, and I think, you feel like you hear it less, but you still hear it. There are those out there that I feel like are maybe chasing the wrong thing. How soon are we going to be back to where we were before? And I don't know that's a world that is going to exist in the exact form that it did, especially in the world of work where so much is changing. So you talk about brands breaking through. Who are some of the, I want to be careful to not cannibalize the brand that makes you smile for the end of the show, but who are some of the breakthrough brands that are finding ways to be relentlessly relevant, as you note?
Yeah, I'd give you two for consideration that have been top of mind for me. One is Etsy. I mean, Etsy is one of those brands that I think a lot of people made a modicum of a bet on a number of years ago to say, oh, well, how long until they're acquired by, big online retailer based in Seattle, Washington. And over the quarters, over the years, what Etsy continued to do was define and redefine a niche around connecting creators, not creators in the digital sense, but literally creators of tactile artifacts and beautiful things with people who wanted to shop small and shop a story. And took the marketplace model that had been popularized and technologically beautified by eBay a decade prior and applied that to a new kind of market for small makers meeting individual consumers, and just continued to innovate around that experience and drive greater connections between human beings about products that folks wanted to own in their homes or own in their personal lives. And the growth arc that they're on now, having acquired Depop and, getting access to more of the Gen Z audience, they added 35 million consumers, 35 million people to their platform in the first 6 to 8 months of the pandemic. Like, people were beating a path to Etsy's door because of the authenticity of the brand and the connections to these wonderful makers in a time when people couldn't go to the main street shop or kind of go to the village market to get some of those kinds of bespoke goods. And so just keeping core to that purpose around who they are and why they exist has helped them stay relentlessly relevant during these kinds of crazy times. And the other one is a much larger company, but Google and the work that Google has done with Pixel 6 to create a more inclusive Android phone that more authentically captures a full range of skin tones. Google set up an entire image equity initiative, that helped reveal that light skin bias has come into photo technology all the way from hardware to the identification algorithms, because they're not tested on diverse enough people. And Google curated this group of cinematographers and colorists who are celebrated for the accuracy with which they portray people of color and asked them, hey, could you please test our burgeoning Android technology? They did a partnership with the New York Times on what they call picture progress to lay the groundwork and open some dialogue on what it looks like to have a more visually equitable future. And instead of just talking about DEI, they intersected product, campaign, and expertise from people outside and inside Google to go tell a wonderful story that matters to the world and then say, oh, by the way, our product. It's a little bit reminded me of that old school Simon Sinek video where he talks about Apple by putting Y at the center. And it's like it didn't even really matter that it was about the Pixel phone per se. I mean, in the end, that's the commercial outcome they're looking for in that story from Google. But to expose the authenticity and relevance of the story that they helped tell and build with a brand like the New York Times through their own kind of individual efforts, I just thought was like a really wonderful demonstration of, if you're going to be the search engine for the world, like show us that you're being inclusive of that whole world.
That's a great intersection of a lot of the things that we've been talking about here: authenticity, purpose, relevance. And I also, you know, you talked about in bringing up Google, you talked about, you know, it's a big example. That's the caveat there. But it also seems like these are things that aren't exclusively available to big brands, these things that you're talking about. They are things that you can employ that smaller organizations can do. Sometimes I think they might even be able to do it easier than these big behemoths.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think as we think about our brand at Qualtrics, and as I think about a lot of the brands that many of my former colleagues at Profit and other places are stewarding, whether from, you know, in-house or out in the agency or consultancy world, I see a lot of traction for those that are identifying authentic partnerships and ways to, you know, proverbially bring the 1+1=3, 5, whatever is your favorite integer there, but partnerships and activations that help tell a story around a product and compel someone to consider that product or that service because of the linkage and the clear demonstration with purpose. And so one of the challenges that I'll set it forth for my team and brand as we go throughout 2022 and beyond is, you know, beyond events and beyond campaigns, what are going to be those kinds of partnerships and collaborations and tie-ups that we authentically instill, you know, using our organization and our talent and our people and the talents and organizations and people of other brands to just put important and wonderful things into the market. So that'll be a little bit of a watch this space, but for sure, so many brands, you know, regardless of size, like can grok this sort of story and do something really important and meaningful in the world.
That is great. And hearing that, and even the watch this space makes me smile, but it's time for me to ask you for the brand, Jesse, that has made you smile most recently.
The brand that has made me smile most recently is Intuit's TurboTax. So I don't know if you have seen the You Do Your Thing spot that they have started to air. if not, go over to YouTube and just Google Intuit TurboTax, You Do Your Thing. The purpose of their new spot is to let people know that TurboTax is relevant for what they call the unusual circumstances use case that so many of us have been living through for the last year plus, not just for the typical individual or small medium business that might be the typical user of TurboTax, like, oh, tax season's coming around, got to re-up on kind of where I'm at financially. It's the ad's hilarious because it shows the person who's like moved out to the middle of the woods. It shows the person who's gone long on crypto and has questions about their taxes there. It shows the person that started like the hair salon. And you see this combination of empathy and relatability and humor and modernity all kind of coming together underneath the umbrella of the Intuit brand expressed through TurboTax. So you have this, what I love about all these dimensions coming together is that it's memorable and it's relatable, but there's also a really strategic branding move in here where there's a fine balance between Intuit and TurboTax. Like, clearly, like, Intuit is the advertiser,
right?
And they're selling the TurboTax kind of story and value prop. And so what Laura Hood Balazs and her team at Intuit, I think, have been doing a really beautiful job of is harnessing the brand equities and harnessing the brand values of TurboTax, of Mint, of QuickBooks, of kind of the portfolio of things that they own, and saying, like, how can we use those great product brands to kind of endow the Intuit brand with more of an emotional connection and a durable connection with all kinds of people, and set that brand up for like a decade plus of relevance by using all of the goodness kind of in their historical product brand. So I smile for two reasons there. I smile because I got a chance to work with Laura a bit earlier in my career, and I'm just so like proud of and just beaming with, you know, kind of excitement for what they're accomplishing at Intuit. And it made me smile as just a consumer who loves great branding and great messaging and great storytelling.
I like that you cited both of the smiles, because the campaign itself is smile worthy, but all the strategy behind it, that's, you know, maybe that's marketers only in our smiles. But I feel like sometimes there's a lot of clever creative out there, but it's great to see something like that, that, like you said, for very specific reasons, does exactly what it needs to do and is fun and clever and everything else.
That's right. Just like before with the skeleton, even though you can't see the bones, you know they're working. You know, the left brain coming together with the right, just to continue to butcher the body metaphor here, yeah, is just one of the most inspiring and incredible and important sources of beauty that we have as brand marketers. Achieving that balance, that blend, is something that when you get it right, just creates a lot of magic.
That is great. And I love that metaphor, and I'm going to continue to clumsily use it myself and somewhere make your dad cringe at all of that for employing it in a not medically sound manner. Jesse, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
I have a website. It's jesse-purewall.com. It's J-E-S-S-E. -purewall.com. And I write essays periodically on all things brand and marketing. There's the podcast there that I get the pleasure of and the honor of hosting on behalf of Qualtrics, Breakthrough Builders, and a whole array of other stuff.
Awesome. Well, we will link up to that in our show notes at onbrandpodcast.com. Jesse, thanks for being on brand with us.
Nick, you bet. It was a pleasure. Happy New Year to you, and be well.
Awesome. And if you like what you're hearing, if we've made you smile, remember to subscribe to the show via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen. Please take a moment, rate and review the podcast to help others find the show. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business too? Caroline Kay hosts a great podcast called Snippets of Genius. Caroline, tell us what these folks will get out of listening.
Snippets of Genius is a lighthearted business podcast with some brilliant insights into how you can attract and cultivate success. In each episode, I have an inspiring conversation with genius guests from the worlds of business development, marketing, design, and wellness. Each of them share their ballsy, daring moves to burst business opportunities wide open. Every episode is designed to give you as much value as possible so you can decide, define, and develop anything you want in your career or business.
Hard to turn that down. Where can people subscribe?
They can come on over to my website, which is www.carolinek.co/podcast, or find the show at marketingpodcast.net, or search for Snippets of Genius wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.